Welcome everybody to today's episode. My name is Rosie Mizrahi and I'm the Care Partnerships Manager here at Citation. We have two distinguished guests with us today, Dr. Donald McCaskill, Chief Executive of Scottish Care, and Amanda Dealey, Senior Employment Law Consultant at Citation. Thank you both for joining us. So Donald, can you start off by telling us a little bit about your background in the Scottish care sector?
I've been in my role as Chief Executive now for 8 and a bit years. And before that, I ran a human rights and equality consultancy for a decade and a half. My particular focus when I joined Scottish Care was the desire to turn it into a human rights-based care membership organisation. And we're still on that journey. Not least, we are still recovering from the impact of the COVID pandemic, which had a huge impact, not just on ourselves as an organisation, but upon every frontline carer across Scotland. So our role is very much to support organisations delivering frontline care in care homes and also in the community through home care and housing support.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And Amanda, how have you been able to work with Scottish Care clients during your time with Citation?
I have a lot of experience, 18 years at the moment actually, and counting, in advising clients in the Scottish care sector on all aspects of employment law and HR, which I've brought with me from previous roles and utilised within my 4 years at Citation and continue to do on a day-to-day basis. Donald mentioned the pandemic, and I actually started here at Citation in 2020, so during the pandemic, which was a time that none of us in any walk of life I would have imagined could possibly have envisaged the challenges that would arise in all areas. Clearly, the challenges in care were extremely unique and sometimes different in Scotland to the rest of the UK due to our own devolved government, much wider than just employment law and HR, of course. But I know that when care clients were doing their utmost to keep people safe, dealing with ever-changing employment law and HR issues were more of a challenge. Back to the present day, don't want to dwell on the past too much, but I advise care clients principally by telephone, but also from time to time by email on such matters of employment law, employee relations and HR, as disciplinary, absence management, redundancy, grievance, discrimination and much more. As you'd said in your introduction, I'm a senior consultant within the team, which as well as the hands-on advisory work provides me with the opportunity to engage in client relationship management with our care clients, which may include speaking to them at more senior director level, for example, and helping them understand how their strategic aims, for example, matters such as mergers, takeovers or restructures may be impacted by employment law and HR. There are also some specific nuances in Scotland, which I'm sure any listeners in care will be familiar with the requirement, for example, for care workers to be registered with the SSSC. And also more widely, issues such as apprenticeships are quite different legally in Scotland to England. Having a team on hand who are fully skilled in specifics of issues that might face the Scottish care sector is something I believe that's beneficial to Citation's clients.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Amanda. And Donald, in your opinion, what are the biggest challenges specifically facing the Scottish care sector today?
For most of our members, and indeed for most of the organisations delivering social care, the biggest challenge is sustainability. And closely related to that is workforce, but the two are interlinked. And sustainability primarily because of the lack of consistent investment from both local and central government in social care has resulted in the inability to invest, to develop and to improve the delivery of care. We have many more organisations facing the challenges of bankruptcy and going to the wall. We've seen more care home closures than at any other time, certainly in over a decade and a half. And many more home care organisations handing back contracts because of their inability to sustain themselves. So the lack of investment, the lack of political priority around social care is a major issue. And that obviously impacts the second major issue, which is workforce. It's difficult to recruit women and men into the care sector when, for instance, in Edinburgh, you can get £2 an hour more for walking a dog than you can for caring for somebody at the end of their life, because that's a society that values things in different ways. So we don't value care workers, and it's difficult to attract people into what is one of the most rewarding professions, because there are very few roles where every day you go out to work knowing that today I can make somebody's life better and I can give them a sense of meaning and purpose. Holding on to these amazing women and men is a very real challenge. Attracting new people into the sector is a challenge. So workforce and sustainability are without doubt the two major challenges.
Absolutely. Obviously, workforce is one of those key areas. And in the wake of the recent election results and the new Labour government, how do you think this shift is likely to impact Scottish care providers over the coming months and years?
So obviously, social care and health are devolved in Scotland. But nevertheless, the election result has changed the Scottish political landscape with the return to government of a substantial number of Labour MPs, up from the two that existed at the start of the election, and a significant loss of SNP MPs. So that has impacted on the political mood and atmosphere in Edinburgh. I think many of us were looking forward to a government which would be less xenophobic, less restrictive, because not least in terms of employment and particularly international employment, we had seen practices from the Home Office which were really depressing. So we were looking forward to an emphasis on social care. We've been already 3 weeks in, mega disappointed. And I know that in particular colleagues in England are reeling from the failure to cap social care, the going back on word around support for funding on training and learning, withdrawal of a couple of other investment funds in social care. So this isn't a new broom. In Scotland, we'd probably use the phrase, this is just a different shade of blue and Tory light. So that sounds very political, but we are in a political context. We're moving to a Scottish election in 2026, and organisations like ourselves and those engaged in frontline care are now more than ever convinced we will not trust a politician's promise. We want to see action, and we want to see commitment which puts people first rather than slogans and policy and power.
Absolutely. Thank you, Donald. And a question to both of you. I'll go to Amanda first. What are your views on workforce planning in care, and how are Scottish care service owners managing their recruitment needs currently?
Well, Donald has already referred to the election and the new UK government that has come into place. So things may change or evolve as a result of that new government having been voted in. But one change that was already planning to be proposed by the previous Conservative government was a right for workers who are on a working pattern, where the hours and times they work are uncertain, to have the right in law to request a predictable working pattern. We do not have a specific date yet for that coming into force, however, as this legislation requires further enabling legislation to bring it in. Although we do know it is expected to be around the autumn. The new government, Keir Starmer's government, have also made some suggestions that they will place some restrictions on zero-hours contracts, with an aim to them being used exploitatively. So we will need to see what, in fact, changes there once we actually see any bills or legislation that is proposed, and exactly what that is going to look like.
Thank you, Amanda, and to Donald as well.
I think the big challenge remains, how can you plan for a workforce and develop a workforce plan which looks into the future when you're in a situation of such risk and crisis or lack of sustainability? It's difficult to know what tomorrow will bring when you're not sure about today. As Amanda has highlighted, we know that there are potential legislative changes. There's been a lot of talk about exploitative zero-hours contracts, and zero-hours contracts have diminished over the years in the social care sector in Scotland. I was a member of the Fair Work Commission, and that's ultimately our aim, to remove exploitative zero-hours contracts. I'm using the phrase exploitative because it's, I think, really important that we enable workers to have choice. And if you speak to many workers, they like, for instance, in home care, the flexibility of having, for them, a 0 hours contract. So I don't think it should be because a politician says you can't have that. if a worker or an organisation feels, in order to respond to the worker's need, that a zero-hour contract fits that and everybody is happy and it's all agreed, then that seems to us to be the way forward. But certainly we need to remove exploitative contracts, which I hope are not likely to exist in the same degree in the social care sector compared to other sectors.
Thank you, Donald. Amanda, how can good HR compliance make recruitment challenges that much easier for care providers?
So on that one, principally, I would say make sure that during the recruitment process, both the employer and the candidate's prospective member of staff know exactly what's expected of them. Employers, once they're recruiting, should ensure that they give appropriate documentation to employees as soon as they start work, if not before, including a contract of employment and employee handbook, for example. I would also suggest that care providers take some advice from an organisation such as ourselves as to what they actually need in terms of documentation. So we've already discussed briefly there 0 hours contracts, as Donald says. I think the point is the practice of exploitative 0 hours contracts is what needs to be looked at. 0 hours contracts, bank worker contracts, as they may be known in care, can actually be quite helpful to both the worker and the care provider. So if you're giving someone a bank contract, though, do make sure that is the appropriate document to give them, that for someone that maybe works on an ad hoc basis where there's no what you'd call mutuality of obligation to give or to receive work. If there's going to be an expectation that someone's working more frequently, for example, or regular hours, then a contract of employment is more likely to be more appropriate. I would also suggest that care providers make sure they have a clear policy around matters such as references and health questionnaires and so on, just onboarding documents. Following a process consistently should help make decisions in recruitment more transparent and highlight any potential challenges that there may arise with maybe particular hires. I would make sure that care providers know that issues might arise not just at the point of employment or during the employment life cycle, but also at the recruitment stage. So that's, again, something else we can advise on. Just thinking there, a lot of people might not know, for example, that unsuccessful candidates in a recruitment process may be able to bring a claim for discrimination. If, for example, they believe the reason they have not got a role is due to having a protected characteristic, there's a number of these, but for example, race, disability, gender reassignment, sexual orientation and so on, or that they feel the recruitment process has been discriminatory and placed them at a disadvantage. An example of that would be, for example, failing to make adjustments to a recruitment process that would support disabled applicants, you know, having your interview on the first floor of a building with no lift, for example, when you know that the candidate is in a wheelchair, being an obvious example, or having a very written heavy process where the role does not require that, which may disadvantage either candidates from overseas who might not be as fluent in English or people with dyslexia or similar. Ensuring a fair recruitment process is followed and documenting everything is certainly very helpful. Also, the key point about recruitment is to make sure you've got the right person, and following a fair process helps make sure that you've done that. And so it helps cut down on things like performance management, challenges of staff turnover. Donald has mentioned the challenges in workforce, and making sure everything is in place, such as PVG, references, etc., before an employee starts work. This all helps with making sure that difficult decisions about whether someone can commence or remain in employment are hopefully minimised.
Brilliant. Thanks, Amanda. And Donald, Amanda mentioned just then about overseas workers. And how do you think robust HR compliance impacts the process of international recruitment?
It's critical. I mean, as Amanda has just highlighted, many of our organisations are smaller organisations, and it's really important that they get the right person to fit into the community. A care home is a community of individuals supporting a community, and you need the right people to fit that environment. So going around the recruitment process in an equitable and fair way that doesn't exclude, doesn't discriminate, that where you make reasonable adjustments to enable that to happen. And that's extremely important with international recruitment, because a lot of international recruitment still happens in a virtual way. And I think sometimes people forget that what is expected of you in a physical environment and recruiting process still applies in a virtual scenario. Scotland has always needed people to come and join us and become part of our community. We've always been a nation that has attracted inward migration. And that remains the case. We've got the fastest ageing population in Europe. And we've got the oldest and fastest ageing workforce in Europe. So we will all the more in the years to come need people to come from other parts of the UK, but also internationally, to come and be part of our community and grow our nation. To do that means that we have to engage in a process that is fair, that's respectful, that's non-exploitative. We have to be aware of the risks of modern slavery and of all the risks attendant in international recruitment. But at the end of the day, this is about relationship. It's about hospitality, especially in a UK legislative and policy framework which has been very hostile to immigrants. We're wanting to create a hospitable environment which is safe, which is respectful, which is compliant with law, but much more importantly, which is welcoming of the person.
Wonderful. Thank you, Donald. Amanda, what are some of the best practices that care service owners can implement to stay ahead in terms of compliance and HR management?
So I may have touched on a couple of these already, but the best thing I would say is the best thing care employers can do is make sure they give appropriate documentation to employees as soon as they start work. Contract employment, employee handbooks, I think I've referenced already. Take some advice on that and exactly what is going to suit everyone's needs the best. Stay up to date on any legal changes. Again, providers such as ourselves can advise on this and send out updates to our clients on any legal changes, which I know can be invaluable. I mean, this year alone, even before the change of government, we've had a significant number of changes in employment law and HR that were implemented by the previous Conservative government, such as changes around holidays. That kind of thing arose from Brexit. We're not subject to the same rules of the precedent set by the European Court of Justice now following Brexit in terms of interpretation of the Working Time Directive. So the UK has been able to bring its own legislation into play about things like holiday accrual, etc. So that's been one change. The right to request flexible working. Now employees have the right to request flexible working from as a day one right and can make two requests a year. So that's just a couple of examples. There are others that may not be hugely relevant to care, but there has been a number of changes. And as we heard in the King's speech, Keir Starmer's government is looking to make even more changes to employment law. The other thing I would advise is always making sure that proper HR processes are followed and documented. So having proper meetings and a process to deal with matters like probation, disciplinary, grievance, flexible working, redundancy, etc. Again, this is something we can advise on. Although we don't have all the specific details of the Labour government's proposed employment law reforms yet, it's likely to become even more important to follow a process, especially as seems likely we're going to have the right to claim unfair dismissal by employees as a day one right. At the moment, employees required to have 2 years of qualifying service to bring an unfair dismissal claim. There are some exceptions for what we'd call automatic unfair dismissal, but it's going to be more widely across the board. So ensuring all of this and a fair process, proper documentation is issued, helps not only build trust with employees, it means that the care clients are going to be ready to hit the ground running because they're already following good practice. We are quite confident with that at Citation in terms of how we advise that our clients are already going to be in a very good position to deal with the challenges of new legislation because we do advise fair processes. Because again, same as care, HR is about people, isn't it? You know, you treat people in a fair and decent manner, and that's important as well. So it helps build trust with employees, may help improve productivity and engagement if you feel your employer cares about you, is going to treat you respectfully. You're going to be maybe more inclined to turn up every day and absolutely give of your best, which is specifically important when you're dealing with vulnerable people who are in need of that kind of real care. And it can also assist if things do, and they do still go wrong despite people's best endeavours. So having that fair process can assist with things like employment tribunal claims when they arise, make sure the documentation is all in place can be key in helping defend any claims. This can all be not only pretty complex, rapidly changing and time consuming. So we're here to help care clients navigate this minefield so they can focus on their critically important day-to-day work of supporting people in need of care services.
Brilliant. Thank you, Amanda. And Donald, what innovations or trends should Scottish care business owners be aware of to stay competitive and deliver high quality care in the future?
The world of care is changing all the time, and we are gaining a huge amount of insight from international colleagues. I think we are, as a whole society, much more connected across the world than we have ever been. So today in Scotland, it's difficult to avoid the fact that we know what is happening in Holland, what's happening in Canada and Australia, and we're gaining insights from one another. Some of those insights, for instance, are that we're increasingly aware that people recognise that small is beautiful. So I think gone are the days of building large units and care homes in particular. And we're moving towards increasingly smaller, more personalised sizes of organisations. We're working with many more small, local, geographically based providers. And I think that's going to be the shape. A number of commentators have said that the larger care home groups will become smaller in terms of their offer and more diverse. Now, that brings particular challenges, because small might be beautiful, but it can also increase the risk, not least around employment practice. I think the other inescapable trend is the increasing use of robotics, AI, and machine learning in the actual assessment delivery of care and support. That's going to bring a particular challenge or an opportunity, and it's up to the care sector whether they grasp the opportunity or shrink away from that challenge. I personally think it will lead to real progress. And also the nature of human community is changing. We had data published just this week to show that a growing number of people in Scotland are living on their own, and that's likely to be the trend, that in 20 years' time the majority of people in Scotland will be in single households. That's going to change the nature of our communities and care. It's going to change the demands that people make and the expectations they have. So the care sector can never continue the way it is. It always has to reshape itself to meet the needs of tomorrow.
Thank you, Donald. And with a similar sort of vein, as the CEO of Scottish Care, what's your vision for the future of the care sector in Scotland? And what role do you see organisations like Citation playing in its future?
My vision for care is that care is valued. It is not considered as a cost, but as a contribution. That we recognised even the basics, which is that social care in Scotland is the fourth economic contributor to the whole of our Scottish economy, more than agriculture, more than fisheries, and just a little below tourism. And yet we don't see care as something that contributes to making us who we are as a nation. We see it as a cost, as a deficit, as a drain. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the women and men who work in care, who deliver care, are properly valued. And that includes recognition through pay and reward, but it also includes recognising that they are the best of us because they enable other people to thrive and flourish and become who they want to be and achieve their potential. There is no better role, much better than moving money, much better than any other role working with people. So a nation that values care, a nation that recognises its contribution, I think is my vision. And I would love us to be in a situation where we've got political leadership that embeds that of any political party. Citation, like any organisation which is in the background to enabling that vision to happen, is fundamentally important because, as we've heard in this podcast, it's the mechanics of how you recruit, how you value, how you retain staff who are the lifeblood of all organisations, that is fundamentally important. And we don't do well by people by being ignorant. We serve people by being informed. And Citation, through its employment support, through its HR work, through its work in terms of health and safety, is about improving our offer to people, which improves our society.
Fantastic, thank you. And as a final thought for both of you, what final advice would you give to Scottish care service owners striving to overcome current challenges and build a resilient, thriving business?
Well, I would say that, as everyone knows, we've discussed already on this podcast, current times are clearly challenging and there's not any sign of the challenges that, society faces letting up anytime soon. And certainly in employment law and HR, we're expecting many more changes and challenges to come in the months and year ahead. So having an employment law HR advisory service who can help ensure compliance and health and safety as well, obviously, and be on hand to offer advice or face-to-face support, as we also can, is likely, I feel, to be something more of benefit to our care clients.
Thank you. And the same to you, Donald.
I would be saying to people, remember you're not alone, that you're part of a community, which is why we encourage people to join Scottish Care, but also why it's important to use the services of an organisation like Citation. You don't know what you don't know. And it's only as you start a conversation that you begin to realise that you're, first of all, maybe misunderstanding an issue that you're facing, and that you are that there is support available to you, but you only need to ask for that support. So that's the critical thing, because I think the next few years will be very challenging. If you try to plough that field on your own, then you'll break down. But if you join together with others, if you use the support of organisations like Citation, then you won't be alone.
Wonderful. Thank you both so much for sharing your invaluable insights with our listeners today. It's been a great discussion, and I'm sure our audience has gained a lot from your experience and advice. If you'd like to find out more about how Citation can support your care service, call 0345 844 1111. Until next time, take care and stay compliant.